Hello, Stella Ruminant eDiscovery fans. I'm Mary Rectoris, part of Relativity's Brand Programs team, and one of your hosts of Stella Ruminant eDiscovery. I am joined today by my co-host, April Rumpt.
Hi, listeners. Stella Ruminant eDiscovery recognizes and celebrates female leaders making their mark in eDiscovery. Throughout last year, we interviewed several candidates and turned this campaign into an Innovation Awards category. This year, we're starting nominations early. So every nominee this year will be up for consideration for the Innovation Awards in the Stellar Women in eDiscovery category at Relativity Fest this October.
So if you know women who are stellar in the field and are breaking barriers, championing innovation, or paying it forward, please nominate them for our campaign. Today, April and I are excited to welcome our first Stellar Woman in eDiscovery candidate for 2019, Mary Mack. Mary is the Executive Director of the Association of Certified eDiscovery Specialists, otherwise known as ACES. Mary, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Mary and April. I'm extremely honored. It is so wonderful to see Relativity celebrating women. I was talking about being honored to be on this webinar. I was totally blown away to be chosen to give away Stellar Women at Relativity Fest last year for your first recipient for Joy Moreau. That was quite an event and quite an honor for me to do that as well. So thank you.
Yeah, we're really excited to kick things off with you this year, Mary, kind of dive into your experience in eDiscovery. Before we do that, I just want to give some background for our listeners. Mary has written a ton of articles on trends shaping the field, such as A Process of Illumination, The Practical Guide to Electronic eDiscovery, which Mary published in 2004. So Mary, thinking back on how the industry has evolved over the years, what makes you excited to be in eDiscovery right now?
It's interesting. Back in 2000, when I moved from more classical IT into eDiscovery, I thought it would be a five-year gig. I really thought that the larger players like the Microsoft Oracles of the world would bake in eDiscovery into their products, and that eDiscovery as like a separate field would sort of disappear, and the need wouldn't be there. And instead, I'm pushing 20 years in the industry now, and there's no end in sight. So for me, it's been the opportunity to have a very, very exciting, always learning, always something to do, never look at your watch type of career, you know, where you can really make an impact. And I don't see that stopping. I see that just exploding more and more and more.
Absolutely. So Mary, being that this episode will air on International Women's Day, why do you think this day and celebrating the achievements of women are important?
Well, I think it's always important to celebrate everybody's achievements, men and women. But historically, in the law, I think if you take a look at the partnership tracks at law firms, say big law in particular, women are not all that well represented. And then also, sometimes women collaborate and step back and don't take credit. So I think it's important for those of us who are aware of women who are doing great things to amplify each other. That's part of what Kaylee Walstead and I do at ACES, is amplify the contributions of others, including women, including underrepresented groups, but also including our wonderful male friends as well.
They're included too, everyone.
Yes. And on that note, one thing that we have noted and really admire about ACES is how, like you said, you celebrate your members, and we love seeing those notifications on social media when you're celebrating someone who has passed that exam. So that was one example that we really admire about you guys.
Well, thank you.
So Mary, you said you've been in this industry for about 20 years or so?
Uh-huh.
How have you seen the industry make strides towards becoming more diverse and giving women more of a seat at the table?
I'd actually flip that on its head, unfortunately. I think in the early days, it was easier for women and underrepresented groups to just dive in and go, because eDiscovery wasn't very well known. And lawyers were afraid of technology, technologists were afraid of lawyers, and those of us who could stand in the middle basically just had to raise our hand and we would get work thrown at us. On a percentage basis, we probably would have seen more diversity in the early days. I think now that money is following, you know, you see all the investment in the e-discovery companies. I mean, it's like a $1 billion industry. I think you see, from my perspective, I see the leadership tracks stratifying a little bit more in a traditional sense. So I think we need to work at keeping the diversity that was so wonderful in the beginning and bringing that forward. You may see something different, though, than I do.
You're more in the weeds, so I think your perspective is probably spot on, Mary. I think that makes a ton of sense. Where it's not well known, you're given a lot more opportunities, but as eDiscovery becomes more prestigious or renowned as an industry, it becomes harder to get those top-level positions, which means diversity, unfortunately, might be tapering off a little bit on that level.
So I want to turn to the topic of community building next. You and Kaylee at ACIDS are pros at this. I felt fortunate to be able to experience this, your leadership and your gift for this firsthand. So this was last year. All three of us were attending the CLOC conference, which is the Corporate Legal Operations Consortium in Las Vegas. Do you remember this?
I do. I think that we've got some pictures we may not want to see. But yes.
So you and Kaylee invited me to kind of ride along with you guys and learn the ropes of attending an industry event, and I really learned a lot about how you build new connections and catch up with your network. This, it really is my favorite memory from that conference. I learned so much from you guys about how to put out a welcoming vibe and put yourself out there to really connect with people. I'm wondering, in your eyes, what's the difference between networking and community building, if there is one? And then two-part question, why do you think networking gets such a bad name these days?
So for me, networking is a little bit more transactional. You hear about networking events where people just stand up, say who they are, say what they're looking for, bring a bunch of business cards, and then in an hour or so, you know, you could collect a whole bunch of cards and then build your relationships from there. And the idea is like a sales focus. I think that's what networking traditionally, when you say it has a bad name, that would be the connotation. But for us, networking is a career builder. And we focus on it, Kaylee and I focus on it with the whole person. So the clock thing, with you doing a ride along with us, we had a booth, we had some people, so we could help you build some connections, give you warm introductions. Here's why you'd want to know this person. And then we have this thing we call a guild dinner. It's a beautiful dinner where guests are hand selected. It's one table. It's designed to be in a place that you can have conversation with the whole table, and at the end, that there's no selling occurs at this. The idea is that you get to know each other as human beings. What's important from a family perspective, not just a career or a sales perspective, but who are these people? What drives them? What are their passion projects? What other points of connection do you have beyond the commercial? Who needs help? That's part of community. It's some people are able to give help, some people need help. Sometimes that switches over time. Getting a group of people together that at the end are intertwined and interconnected in many different ways, not just the commercial way.
And I love how you put that simply of giving and asking for help. I think that is such a human way of explaining that. I love it.
I'd like to dive, Mary, a little bit into networking, because I find that, as you said, networking is crucial. It's a career builder. Everyone has to do it. And there's some people, like April, my colleague Tammy, where she loves networking. She thrives on it. But there's other of us who might be not so jazzed about going to a networking event after work. And at Relativity Fest, you ran a very popular session that was about networking for introverts. And we also ran as a blog post. We'll post that in the show notes for listeners in case you want to take a gander. Amira, can you share a few tips for those of us who might be a little shyer or more on the introverted side for how to successfully network?
I absolutely can. I'll need to come out of the closet as an extrovert when I do. So we did this twice now at Relativity Fest, and our last one had people that you might not think of as introverts, like George Socha, Judge Peck, Barb Bennett, David Greedham, on the panel talking about how they, as introverts, basically get themselves ready and how they successfully network. So one of the things, of course, is to have a plan. We go have a wingman. On this podcast, we should call it a wing person, but, you know, somebody that you don't just go by yourself. At the ACIDS events, we have something we call the ACES Ambassador Program, where people wear a button and anybody can just walk up and say, I'm new here, can you introduce me to some folks? Introverts like to wear those buttons because people approach them, and they don't have to do the approach. So that's one thing. The other is that webinar had a whole lot of different tips, how to break into a group, how to tell if a group is closed or not while you're at events, how not to get liquid courage, if you will. It's probably not a good look at a business networking event, especially if you're nervous. You know, how to ask the bartender for a soda and a lime that looks like a mixed drink, and you can still walk around a cocktail party, but you're ready to meet people, and how you don't oversell, you don't overstay your welcome. You know, how to do those kind of things. And mostly, I would say, for introverts, it's how to take care of yourself. Schedule some time before an event so that you're rested and ready for it, and after the event so that you can recover from it. Because extroverts like me, we get energy from those events. What I've experienced with many introverts is those necessary evil, if you will, events sometimes suck energy out. And it does move your career forward, but you still have an impact on yourself. So to be gentle with yourself afterwards.
But don't necessarily let yourself off the hook, right? If you say, oh, I don't like those, don't just avoid them and think you'll be fine.
Well, you can avoid them, but it's an accelerant to your career to meet people. The more people you meet, I think it's Reid Hoffman, a LinkedIn founder, wrote a book. I can't remember exactly what the name of it is, but he talked about the weak ties. So it's not like your first level connections that find you your next opportunity, whether it be a job or a commercial deal or somebody to help you with a project that's one of your passion projects. It's your weak ties. It's the ones that are connections of connections. At, say, Legal Tech or at Clock, you can connect with an enormous number of people in a short amount of time. So I think it's worth setting yourself up for success and taking a deep breath. Find yourself an extrovert. You know, Kaylee and I are always willing, and many of our ACES members are extroverts. Find an extrovert and have them be your wing person.
I love that idea of the ACES ambassador buttons as a signal that this is somebody who will introduce you around, no questions asked. It's such a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Since we're on International Women's Day, it's also, if someone's having an issue in the event, that they have a person that they can go to that will find Kaylee or myself to resolve. It serves many, many purposes, the ACES ambassador.
Yes. True community. So, Mary, stemming from your own experience, and on this networking topic, what advice might you give to women and other underrepresented groups who may be considering pursuing a career in legal tech, but if they're not established in the industry, they may be starting over at ground level in terms of building their network?
Get yourself a Twitter account, get yourself a LinkedIn, get good pictures for that. And we have a webinar on starting up in social media on the ACES site, and I think we've done some posts on them that maybe we could include in the show notes. That can go on in the background of what you're doing. The other thing I would do would be to find the events that appeal to you. So if you're a tech person, if you're behind the scenes, you don't have a lot of client contact, but you're building queries, you may want to network in more of a hackathon setting where you can show off your technical prowess while you're meeting other people. Underrepresented groups, women, I think, need to get some, and this is a bit self-serving because I'm executive director of a certifying organization, but I think certifications are really, really important. And I know Relativity has certifications, and I would say get some certifications under your belt. I certified also, not just in e-discovery, but also in security. I've got my CISSP in part because it stops questions about your competence. Women in underrepresented groups sometimes are mistaken for the people who bring coffee, if you could even imagine, or who take notes during a meeting and aren't the ones who are carrying the technical water or the legal water. So those of us in those categories have to do more, have to be more, have to have labels that show that we have accomplishments to stop those questions.
And I do love the point about social media and breaking into a new industry. It's happened a couple times, which I'm sure you've experienced this too, but I might mutually follow somebody on Twitter and then meet them in person at an industry event. And it's just the coolest thing when that happens.
It's almost like you know them already.
Yes.
And I'm always like, oh, I know you from LinkedIn.
Yeah, it's powerful.
It is. So Mary, the Stellar Women in eDiscovery campaign, what we're trying to do is really celebrate women who are mentors in the field, and they're looking to elevate the career of others. As someone who has been a mentor in the industry, what do you find makes for a successful mentor-mentee relationship?
Well, for me, that is reciprocal, because the mentee is generally somebody who's newer in the industry or maybe younger, is going to bring new eyes to situations, or perhaps a facility with social media like Insti, you know, my grandson's on the Insti, and things that you might not, as a mentor, know about, because it's not a one-way relationship. The other thing is both parties need to allocate time and make it an important thing. And both the mentor and the mentee, sometimes that will switch around, as I said, because it's reciprocal, both need to be able to hear criticism in a constructive way and then bring back the results. I took your suggestion and here's what happened. Or if there's an introduction to somebody, I reached out to them and we had a fabulous conversation. Or I reached out to them and I didn't hear from them. Basically feeding back into your mentor-mentee relationship. So there's deep mentoring, where you talk to somebody once, and then there's longer-term relationships. So knowing what you're signing up for. This is a six-month mentoring gig. Is it for a particular purpose? Be intentional about your requests for mentoring. As a mentor, make sure you have time to take the people's calls when they need it.
Mary, controversial follow-up question here. What is your stance on whether to overtly make the ask for someone to serve as your mentor, to have that clarity, versus falling into the relationship naturally where both parties assume that that is the relationship you have?
Interesting. I think you can get the essential benefit of mentoring from people that are not formally your mentor, and you can ask people for advice or hang out. There's somebody that we absolutely love. Kaylee and I have a person that we were pleased to meet, like you said, in person after being on social with them for quite a while, Sheila Grilla in San Diego. I have never experienced a virtual mentoring arrangement, but she referred to me and to Kaylee as her e-mentors, and she basically followed us on social, and that was how we realized she was a mentor. I think being intentional and out loud will move you forward in a mentoring relationship. It's a very special thing. It's both fragile and strong at the same time, and to just fall into it could set the mentee up for disappointment. I would hate to see people, if they're that close to somebody that they want to mentor, not make the ask. Most people will be honored and flattered, and if they're not, they don't have the time, then they're not the appropriate mentor for you at the time, and maybe they could suggest somebody else, or you find somebody else that does have that time and will be looking out for your best interest.
Great. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and Mary, this question has come up. I'm in a group here, Wow Wow Relativity, and a few months back we hosted a panel on mentorship, and a question that came out, it seems with a lot of the panelists, the mentor-mentee relationship happened very organically. They were just very lucky to meet someone at their organization who could serve as that mentor. But what if there's nobody that you know who could be a mentor? How do you go about finding someone, whether that's within your organization or maybe in a completely different industry?
Well, certainly in ASIP, we've had some webinars on mentoring, and you know, people send us notes. We put people together. Inside your own organization, you need to look for the people whose leadership style or their technical chops or their sales ability, depending on what it is that you want to emulate, you need to identify that yourself. And then I would start slow, and maybe a coffee, maybe lunch, maybe just a phone call, and ask them about their experience. How did you get to be such a great salesperson? How did you learn how to scale your SQL queries, depending on what it is that you want to be mentored about? And start that conversation and then build into it, depending on whether you resonate with that person or not, whether the conversation feels forced, whether it just flows. I do get that through life, you will have mentors appear for you that you don't ask for, and you don't have a, for lack of a better word, a formal, really an out loud mentor relationship with, and you learn from them, and you kind of like stalk them a little bit and just watch what they're doing all the time, read all their stuff, all that. Mentors can open a lot of doors for their mentees, and if it's not an out loud relationship, that piece might not happen. Or thinking about them when something new comes up, oh, this person would be great to step into that, knowing where your growing edge is, where you should stretch yourself from the mentor's perspective. I totally respect the ones that come up organically. I would just suggest take the extra step.
Yeah, even if you think it's awkward, I would be super flattered if someone asked me to be a mentor. But yeah, just have that conversation. It's super helpful.
So in other words, you two are offering to be mentors for people who might want to break into podcasting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, this is our first go at the professional microphones, but we'd definitely be down to share what we know so far.
See, you're not that many people are doing podcasting, so, I mean, that's just one of the things you could mentor on.
Awesome. Well, Mary, this was so much fun. It was great talking with you and learning about your career and everything. So thank you so much for joining April and me today.
Oh, thank you for this wonderful honor, and happy International Women's Day to everybody.
Thank you so much. So closing here, listeners, thank you for tuning in. Please keep nominating people you know in the industry doing great things.
And something we're doing new and that we're very excited about is getting all of our past interviews into a podcast format. And you're able to download those in Apple Podcasts and iTunes or wherever else you get your daily dose of podcasts. Please subscribe to the Stellar Woman in eDiscovery podcast so you don't miss the latest episode. And with that, for Stellar Woman in eDiscovery, I'm Mary Rectoris.
And I'm April Rumpft, signing off.